It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here. We're going to talk about Microsoft's plans for 2016, including their lack of a messaging platform. I've got a really good idea for you, Microsoft. We'll talk next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 448, recorded Wednesday, January 13th, 2016. Peanut butter in beer form. Windows Weekly is brought to you by FreshBooks, the super simple cloud accounting software. It's giving thousands of freelancers and small businesses the tools to save time billing and get paid faster. Try it free at FreshBooks.com/Windows. And by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting Casper.com/Windows and use the promo code Windows. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click, screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/Windows. It's time for Windows Weekly. Yeah.
Hey.
So there.
All right.
Show where we talk about Microsoft Weekly with Mr. Paul Thurrott of Thurrott.com and Ms. Mary Jo Foley of AllAboutMicrosoft.com. Hello, you two.
Hello.
You crazy kids doing your Windows updates right before the show. Me too.
And into the beginning of the show.
Yeah. I know. I was in countdown. I was like,
We've mentioned several times the one time where I was, this is in the early days, it was just me and Paul on audio. And what happened? I was doing an update and
I was telling how to do some kind of an update thing and I was like, but just don't do it now. And you're like, so just click the thing. I'm like, don't click it now. And then the thing went blank.
Because I was running machine rebooted. Skype and the recording on the same Windows machine. Yep. Ah, those were the days.
Yep.
Now, if you asked me, I couldn't even find the machine that is running Skype or Windows or anything in here. It's just it's a great big mystery. Well, how are you all? Our second show of the new year, and you want to talk already. You want us to talk predictions for Microsoft for the future.
Yeah, why not?
Why not? Here's a prediction. Mary Jo Foley will stop getting invited to upgrade to Windows 8 or Windows 10 or whatever it is.
It's happening. I don't know why it's happening, which is a little... It's making me nervous that I'm not getting the...
It's
the quiet before the storm.
Isn't that a symptom of Stockholm Syndrome? When they stop holding you hostage, you feel uncomfortable?
Or it's like, I'm going to unlock the gate of your cell. You can leave whenever you want.
Oh.
And then they just walk away.
Oh, I don't want to leave. I love you, GWT.
Yep.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, it was weird. I kept getting it, and I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to keep ignoring it. And then one day last week, I just stopped getting it.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because in a completely unrelated story, Steve Gibson yesterday was bemoaning the final end of support for XP. Because remember what he did with that trick? Talked Windows into thinking it was XP embedded, and he continued to get updates for another year. But that finally ended. And I said, "Are you going to stop using Windows XP?" He said, "Oh hell no."
We need to have an intervention for Steve.
I know.
He said, I imagine someday I'll get to Windows 7 before I die.
You know, someday his doorbell's going to ring and he's going to open it and it's going to be me and Mary Jo and he's going to be like, I knew this day was coming.
We've come for you. I for one, am very happy with Windows 10, although I have to confess I'm still plagued by flakiness on my Surface Book of all sorts of odd kinds.
Now we have a rumor about that.
Oh, good. Well, let's start. What do we think is going to happen in 2016?
I think we're screwed, Leo. I don't know. So, Mary Jo, you must have written, you wrote a whole article about this, right?
I did. I had to write a column. I also do a column on Redmond Magazine, and I had to do a predictions column this year.
Okay.
So you want to hear mine?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, last year was so huge for Microsoft. It was like there were so many things happening with Windows and Office, and it was just like rollout after rollout. So I think this year is going to be a year of what Nadella likes to call fewer, bigger bets. So I think we're going to see less momentous new stuff.
Yeah.
Unless you count Windows Server and SQL Server 2016. I mean, that's right. Pretty huge. But
who doesn't?
Who doesn't? But yeah. But so in my column, I said, I think there are going to be fewer things, but they're going to kind of consolidate more around what Microsoft has been saying they want to be, which is productivity, services, and software. So I predicted that we'll see more productivity acquisitions, and we'll see Microsoft do things like they did today, just before the show, in fact, where they bought some assets from a company that does Skype for Business analytics kinds of stuff called Event Zero. I think we'll also see the Surface Phone this year. And I'll be curious how and when that comes about, and kind of how Microsoft then positions that vis-a-vis the Lumia phones.
Well, Anne, how does that fit into product services and software? Where's hardware and products, or I mean, productivity services and software?
Right. So if you look at what's going on with hardware at Microsoft right now, hardware is all about helping them sell their software and services. Mm-hmm. So if everything they do with the Surface Book now and the Surface Pro and the Surface, and I will argue the Surface Phone, is about selling software and services.
Right.
It's about selling OneNote. It's about selling Azure, Office 365. So I think Microsoft will stay in hardware, most likely. I mean, they may not make the hardware, but they'll be designing the hardware, branding the hardware, and doing like what they do with Xbox now, which is they're going to have a hardware platform to help them sell all the things around it.
Mm.
So I think that does fit in still.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we will see that this year.
But hardware isn't a core business. It's just a marketing tool, almost. It is
in a way. Although I would also argue, once last year Microsoft joined the Windows team to the devices group, those two teams really began to mesh. And I think if you look at where they're going with things like Redstone, which is the new version of Windows they're working on now, it's very informed by what they want to do with hardware. So I'd almost argue that the features we're going to see come out in Windows in 2016 are going to be because of what Microsoft is doing with its hardware instead of the other way around. So, yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting year on that front.
That's actually interesting. That has lots of implications.
It does. Because, you know, they still are working with OEMs, right?
Yeah.
So,
but their hardware is going to drive Windows.
I think their hardware is already driving Windows in a way. When I interviewed Nadella last year, one interesting thing he said to me was, we want to keep an OEM ecosystem going. But if people won't make Windows phones, or if they don't make PCs the way we want them made, we're going to make them, right? We're going to make them to keep the market for Windows fresh and lively. So, yeah, I know. I think Wall Street would love to see Microsoft dump hardware because it's a low margin business compared to software and services, but I don't think they can in a way.
This is part of that one Microsoft thing. And it almost needs to go a little further. I did a Microsoft Signature PC study last month that I'll be writing about probably before the end of this month. And, you know, one of the things that I sort of thought of in going through this was that Microsoft has this Signature PC thing for their stores. The Surface essentially is a Signature PC experience, and they don't market it that way. And it seems like these groups, Windows, Surface, Signature, and other parts of the company too, need to be a little more, not like literally integrated, but on the same page with this kind of stuff. You know, that if you think of a Surface device as an aspirational premium bit of hardware, a lot of people can't afford that. But what if I could get the same software experience on a less expensive Dell or HP or whatever it may be? Well, Microsoft does offer that, but they never really have that message together. You know, Surface is its own thing. Signature PC is its own thing. Windows is its own thing. And like you said, you know, these groups are starting to come together internally. So hopefully externally, we'll see the benefit of that as well.
I think my craziest prediction in my list, well, maybe it's not that crazy. I said, I think Microsoft and Google will actually announce a partnership in 2016 of some kind. I don't know if it'll be a partnership with real teeth or if it'll be more kind of like what they did with Salesforce, which to me was like, hey, we're still friends, even though we compete, and we're going to have some apps for Windows 10.
You know what, though? I actually think that's a great idea. And how do they really compete? I mean, how do they compete in areas that are meaningful to both companies? They kind of don't, you know. I mean, they obviously do. I mean, you know, they have Bing and Google has Google Search. And Google Search is much bigger than Bing. Microsoft is a much bigger office productivity business than Google does, although Google has one too. But, you know, their common competitor is Apple. And I actually think that that is what will drive that type of partnership. I think that makes plenty of sense. Of sense.
I think a lot of people were expecting some kind of partnership last year because they were saying, you know, Microsoft's trying to make nice with different Android vendors now, and maybe it's not so crazy that they'll do something with Google, but I don't know how far the partnership will really go. Like, will it really deliver anything that people want? I mean, if there was just something basic like, you know, certain Google apps on Windows 10, that would be great. That would be enough for a lot of people, right?
Yeah, that would be enough. I mean, even if Microsoft had to be the company that originated the apps, but they worked with Google behind the scenes to make it happen, I think that would be perfectly acceptable to everybody.
Right. Microsoft has this new executive. She's not that new now. Her name's Peggy Johnson, and she's the head of business development for Microsoft. And her job, from what I can tell, seems to be to go around to companies of all sizes and try to partner with them. She's the one who's been speaking out on partnerships with Cyanogen, and she's been talking to a lot of startups in the Valley about partnerships. So I think they definitely are going out of their way to try to have more partnerships like they did, like I said, with Salesforce, with SAP, Red Hat. So I think they're kind of in partnering mode more than they have been in the past. They used to be in attack mode more than partnering mode.
I think, I mean, I didn't come to a kind of a Google partnership, but I like that idea. I sort of see Microsoft increasing its Android investment this year one way or the other. In other words, a Google partnership would be the ideal way to do that. But either an expansion of what they're doing with Cyanogen, a Microsoft-branded Android something, whatever it is, Universal Apps running on Android, I think is a logical next direction for that platform. And I think what's going to drive it is that the Windows mobile, the Windows 10 mobile, whatever, Windows phone market share is going to just crater. I think it already has. It's 1 point something. I think it's going to hit one. I think it's going to be artificially sustained because Microsoft feels like it needs to make hardware. But I don't think that's a viable business. And they need to be in mobile. And I think Android is going to be the thing that makes that happen. And from Google's perspective, a partner of the caliber of Microsoft would be a huge boon to the Android ecosystem.
Would a Surface phone be an Android phone?
God, you know, well, I've heard that.
Now we're getting into crazy town. But,
I know. Mean, I've actually I've never thought about that before. I'm like, you know, how it would be crazy, but what if it was a Cyanogen phone?
Yeah,
that's only, that's not so bad.
Does send some mixed messages. I guess I would forced to think about this. The thing I would say off the top of my head is, they can't do that unless Universal Apps run on that platform.
Right.
A Surface phone can't not run Universal Apps.
They killed the Android bridge, so that's not going to happen.
Right. As far as we know.
Right.
Leon Zaman saying, do either of us think Microsoft would buy Snapchat?
Why?
Because Snapchat just to annoy,
Microsoft. To annoy the CEO. No, I don't think that's why a company spends billions of dollars, just to annoy the other guy's CEO.
I don't think so. Mm. You know, the other one that you hear rumors about a lot is, would Microsoft buy Slack? Because I think Slack would fit in.
Microsoft does not have a compelling messaging platform. Let's face it. They killed MSN.
They have so many.
Right. And none of them are in any way
It's hard to know what we're talking about, though, right? Because obviously they have Skype, and Skype is a big platform, but Skype really, does it compete directly with WhatsApp or whatever these messages. I don't even know what half these things are. I mean, it's really hard to keep track of the stuff.
The only one they have to compete against is Facebook Messenger. That's the clear and present danger. And
And by the way, speaking of which, you know, 800, you know this, Leo, but I mean, 800 million active users on Facebook Messenger. All they did was strip out the messaging functionality from their one app.
Yeah.
And now they have multiple apps, and one of them has 800 million users.
Simple explanation for that is you don't buy a phone that can only call a tenth of the world. You have to buy the phone that calls the most people. Messenger connects with the most people for the most people. And so that's it's just a no-brainer. Skype maybe has a shot. Yammer, now, Slack is primarily a business and a productivity tool. Is that saying that Yammer is a failure?
Yeah, but you know what? Microsoft, there's a lot of talk about Skype for Microsoft. We have some Skype news for today, but I see Skype in the way that I see a lot of Microsoft stuff. And I've been talking recently about how I sort of feel like the future of this company is cloud services and so forth. You know, Skype becomes part of something. And if you think about how it is on the phone, you could be in the messaging app, and you could be on Skype, you could be on SMS, MMS, it's a piece of the puzzle. It's the thing that bridges the gap between traditional cell networks and Wi-Fi networks or whatever traditional computer networks. Obviously, for productivity things, it's a big deal for meetings and for sharing the screen and for having multiple people in a video chat, whatever it is. But as far as like person-to-person communication, I feel like FaceTime, for whatever reason, gets a lot more publicity.
But that's really a non-starter because it's Apple only.
I know, but even out in the world, I see people FaceTiming each other.
Ew.
You know, I don't know that I've ever seen anyone Skype someone else.
And it's funny because I would much rather use Skype because it's universal and I can use it on a variety of platforms. But when I call my family, they all are iPhone users. They want to FaceTime.
Yeah. It's very strange.
Market
is ripe.
You know? Stitch this cloud together because Google is also falling behind to Microsoft Facebook Messenger. Hangouts and is a moribund platform. Wouldn't it be interesting if Microsoft? Well, here's a thought: Microsoft and Google partnered on a messaging platform.
Yeah, Skype Hangouts.
That's dead. That's dead before.
We'll call it Skype Outs.
Skype Outs.
Hey, I'm going to Skype out somebody.
But they have the technology.
I better call the police.
I think a Google Microsoft messaging partnership is the only credible way to thwart Facebook and its imminent world domination.
The one thing it's funny we're talking about Google for whatever reason, but the one thing I've always sort of felt about Google is that they share an interesting kind of engineer DNA type of thing with Microsoft. You know, that Microsoft has been around a lot longer.
Culturally, they're very similar.
Culturally, yeah. I really do feel like obviously Google, by virtue of its co-founders, has kind of a quirky weirdness to it. But if the basic kind of engineering-driven DNA, again, for lack of a better term, of that company does remind me of Microsoft way more than anything at Apple. You know, obviously Apple has great engineers and all that kind of stuff. They make software and hardware and whatever. But I don't get that vibe from Apple like I do from Google.
The real companies I could see partnering on a messaging platform would be Facebook and Microsoft.
Well, then it's all over. I mean, but that would be Microsoft basically saying, okay, you win, Facebook. We'll just...
But they've been saying that in a lot of places, haven't they?
Skype, Facebook used Skype, but then replaced it with their own equivalent.
Yep.
Bing and Facebook seem to have kind of more of a relationship than anything. And then Facebook and Google. I mean, it's conceivable, but I think that it would be basically Microsoft's doing, isn't it? It's saying, okay, you're the leader in that category. We'll go with you. We won't attempt to.
And by the way, maybe what Microsoft brings to this party is the back end stuff, not to mention the productivity scenarios.
Right.
And what Facebook brings to it is everything else.
Well, then it really would be over. I mean, it would clinch it. Apple should fear that.
Right. I mean, that is in keeping with how Microsoft sees itself and how I sort of see Microsoft going forward. You know, the plumbing, if you will, the back end data center part of it.
Yeah.
That's fair. Is anybody speculating that's the,
No, I mean, I don't think Microsoft's given up on Skype in any way. In fact, I think they're just starting to figure out what to do with Skype in a way. I mean, today they said that finally they've got what's it called? Skype Translator integrated into everything on Windows now. Like all Windows desktops have Skype Translator built in. So that's something that they really haven't.
Like you need to go to the virus or something.
They really
sorry, everybody. That, right? Skype Translator's in there. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
I feel so like, I mean, I don't do know. You that, feel like, that, let me ask you at this point, put it this way. Do you feel like there is a default Microsoft messaging platform that replaced MSN Messenger? Do you feel like when I sit down at Windows, I know that. You and I know that because that's Microsoft's strategy. But when somebody sits down at Windows, do they think, oh, yeah, it's got messaging built in? I don't think so. Do they? Maybe I'm wrong. Do you guys use Skype Messenger to talk to each other?
Yeah, we do. We use Skype Messenger.
All right. So I'm talking to the wrong people.
So, but, you know, the funny thing is, that's not built into Windows. What's built into Windows is this craptastic set, and by the way, set of three completely pointless applications that on a PC just don't seem to belong. But what they are analogs to what you see in a phone. And so
do you use Skype phone app as a messenger on your phone?
No.
Because if it doesn't do it on the phone, you don't have a platform. Interestingly,
because I knew Mary Jo would be on Skype. But normally, no. I mean, if I were out in the world and I wanted to reach Mary Jo, for example, I would use...
messaging is primarily on mobile.
I would use a text message.
Desktop is a second. In fact, Facebook doesn't even have a desktop client for Messenger for Macintosh. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Well, Microsoft is doing the universal app platform. And so it's integrating Skype into messaging, which makes sense on a phone. It's integrating it into the phone app, which sort of makes sense because you might want to turn a phone call into a video call. Unfortunately, they brought that stuff over to the desktop version of Windows as well, and it's pretty terrible. Obviously, this is something that can only get better, but anyone who uses Skype on Windows desktop downloads the Windows desktop application. It does everything. Why wouldn't you just get that? It's weird to me that that's not just what's built into Windows, frankly, but...
Skype. We say this every day. Oh, Skype.
Oh, yeah. I mean, until yesterday, all my Skype messages were out of order because there was apparently they added a shuffle feature to Skype just to keep us on a
Skype shuffle. It's the new.
Did you try to use that fix that you sent me, by the way?
Yeah. For that? It seems like it worked. Yeah, the new version.
It fixes the out of order messages, but I still was having that thing where it showed unread messages, even though I had read them.
Yeah, so actually I discovered a Skype feature because of that, which is you could right-click people's names in the list and say, mark as read. Because it makes me crazy when there's a little orange circle that says I haven't read a message when I have. So that's how you fix that. Stupid.
Yeah, but messaging, they're trying to fix a lot of things. Outlook is also their messaging platform too, right? And they've taken the guy who ran Acompli, Javier... What's his last name? Sotero, I think. I'm probably getting that wrong. He now is running Outlook for every platform, like for iOS, for Android, for Windows. And, you know, Microsoft doesn't just have one Outlook either. They have Outlook Web App, which has some new name that I'm forgetting now.
But hasn't this always been Microsoft's thing? A bunch of things with the same name. A bunch of the same things with different names. And, I mean, we're trying to talk about progress at Skype. Seriously, for Skype, progress is... We've just spent the past 18 months rebranding our business product to Skype for Business. Guys, seriously, it's a mess.
Yeah, I know. So you have Outlook, you have Skype, you have Yammer still, although Yammer increasingly is just kind of getting folded into other things from what I can tell. There's still a Yammer client if you want that, but they're taking all the Yammer functionality like groups, right? And they're building that into Office 365.
Part of SharePoint, so they're taking part of Office 365.
And just mushing it in there. So, they have a lot of different messaging platforms. They have email messaging. It's kind of hard to feel how they all fit together. And they're not the leader in messaging.
I have news for Microsoft. You're this close to losing everything on messaging. It's just almost over. In fact,
it's probably over. Look, our careers largely have been in the search of clarity, and the reason that's the case is because this is how Microsoft operates all too often. It's really hard to understand where the strategy is, what the point is of these things. Skype, you could write a book about this, just about the product. I mean, it's crazy how back and forth it is. Remember, the Windows 8 modern client was going to replace the desktop app. Mm. And then it wasn't. And then we have these universal apps all of a sudden. What is going on? It's crazy. It's just if you just look at that part of it alone, it's insanity. Yeah. Whatever. We use Skype every single day. We rely on it. I don't know anyone who could claim to love Skype. But we do rely on it. And man, it unfortunately, when you use something this much, you really kind of live or die on the problems. And, you know, Skype in particular is a mess. And I agree with you, Leo. I think they risk being left behind. This 10 years of Skype video thing that, you know, the little blog post they had from this week was almost a reminder, like, hey, we're still over here, you know. And I listen, there are no doubt hundreds of millions of people that use Skype.
We use Skype for video calling. I'm talking about as a messaging platform.
As messaging, yeah.
I think that
I don't think it's
not. It does. Its brand doesn't say messaging. Its brand says video calling. Yep. And so that's not going to do it. And they killed MSN Messenger, which was a strong contender. And now they have to be thinking, oops, because what's interesting is messaging is the new platform, I think, is a huge platform. And Microsoft's a platform company. And they must see that. And they must be thinking to themselves, oh. And I'm just wondering what their response to that is. Are they making a cohesive, unified response to the threat that they're... That the platform's going to emerge.
Skype Hangouts.
Yeah, no. Sorry. Bad news.
I don't know.
You know, I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens with Skype in terms of it becoming like a telecommunications platform too, right? Like that's what the phone companies are afraid of. It hasn't happened.
Well, it has on the business side. I mean,
it has on the business side.
Everybody uses VoIP in business now, by the way.
Right.
Everybody does. Yeah. In one form or fashion or another. I mean, it's not necessarily Skype. Right. It might be invisible. In fact, to our.
You know, if you're suggesting that they fell into this rather than led this market, I would say that you're probably onto something.
Our employees probably don't know that our phones are not connected to the telco, to the plain old telephone service. It looks like
the fact that we're having a conversation about understanding where communications occur. Sort of tells you where we are in the state of this thing. I mean, people should be like you were, I think Leo said earlier, the notion that I think it was for Facebook Messenger that, you want to reach the most people. The most people want to reach the most people. I don't think they care that it may be going over a cellular network. It may be going over a data network. Nobody cares. It needs to work universally. Yeah.
You want dial tone.
Yeah.
And if I can't
and we'll
call
be calling
you.
It a dial tone long after there is no dial tone in the same way that we say we tape TV shows or
there is no
you know whatever it is that kind of thing but
true. And somebody in the chat room says, oh Leo, you're completely wrong, everybody uses Skype for chat messaging.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
I mean, maybe I am.
That's clearly not true, as evidenced by the 800 million Facebook Messenger users.
I don't see a lot of Skype messages. Nobody's messaging me on Skype, and I certainly don't message anybody.
Well, I think in the Windows world that many of our listeners live in, we do.
Yeah, but desktop messaging isn't really key to the thing.
Right. Well, look at Microsoft's presence in mobile. That's where they're hurt, right? Like that's where they're
right.
Weakest.
So that makes, it only gets worse if you don't have a credible. I mean, they're selling handsets. They're selling handset operating systems. There's having a presence on mobile, and it's pretty clear with the release of Office for mobile that Microsoft understands that having a presence on mobile at least is kind of table stakes.
Yep.
And I think it really becomes clear that messaging is going to be a critical, and it's an opportunity. By the way, it's not the game is not over yet.
It may not be over, but the Microsoft is sitting at the children's table,
right?
Is the way to say it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that does speak to the possibility of a partnership, whatever it may be, Google, Facebook,
or Facebook. That's not a bad idea. It's kind of conceding.
I mean, they've had a lot of partnerships, and they invested in Facebook in the past.
Right.
So it wouldn't be unprecedented.
No, and it's kind of the strategy anyway, right? It doesn't doesn't have to be built here anymore.
Right.
Okay. What other you said fewer, bigger bets. But, you know, you can't sit still in this industry, and I think that's a lesson Microsoft has learned several times to its peril. You know, it took Bill Gates a while to see that the internet was coming, and they had to scramble to reinvent the company. I think it took them a while to understand that cloud was the new platform. They had to scramble to reinvent the company.
Yeah, but you know, when those things happened, Microsoft was operating from a position of power, and so being a little bit late to the game was okay because they could talk internet and, you know, the whole world would stop to wait to see what they did.
What does Bill Gates' book say about the internet? Oh, he must know what's going on, right?
Now, what does he mention? He doesn't mention the word internet, right? Is that what the book he published in 1996 or whatever?
It's all right. You know, he wrote the famous memo, and they did turn, but you make a good point. They were turning from a position of
the famous dominance. Memo was written for Bill Gates, actually. But yes, I guess his name was at the bottom of it.
Right.
I don't know. You know, they're not in that position. And so I think that I really what we keep coming back to, I think, is that time is running out. And in this case, and I think that points to the potential for some good partnerships.
And cloud strategy, the enterprise strategy seems very strong still. So double down.
Yeah, that stuff's gangbusters. That's all good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's take a break. We have now solved the conundrum of what to do in the coming year.
Yep, done. Actually, can we just go home?
Does Satya Nadella do the equivalent of a State of the Union? Is there some point where they do something
like
that?
He should. He usually does it in the summer, right around the start or end of the current fiscal and start of the new one.
Fiscal year, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So maybe not till late June, early July.
Yeah, they're not thinking in calendar terms. They're thinking in fiscal terms.
Well, they're thinking fiscal calendar terms, right? So after the last fiscal year is when they did the big rejiggering of Windows Phone and that strategy. I think it's very healthy after a year. This is why we have New Year's resolutions. I mean, you kind of take stock of the previous year, what went right, what went wrong.
Yeah.
And he seems very pragmatic about businesses that aren't making money. And being aggressive about chopping those off. So we'll see. I mean, this July could be very interesting for that reason.
I imagine they're having conversations like this in those senior leadership meetings.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
I think Campisella's bringing in his tape recorder and putting in a cassette with Windows Weekly in it.
Yep.
Saying, listen to this. All right. Our show today brought to you by FreshBooks. An accounting solution for anybody who's in business for themselves and I know that's a lot of you, and hey, that's great. That's the new economy, right? Start your own business, freelance, gig economy. But there is a bit of it that nobody wants to do, everybody hates, and that's sending out the invoices at the end of the month, getting paid. But you know, you don't do it. It's kind of, you don't get paid. You don't have a business. So FreshBooks, at least, and I know this from my own experience as a freelancer for many, many years, FreshBooks was a lifesaver for me because it made it very easy for me, instead of sitting down with Word and Excel and a shoebox full of receipts, I was able to go to FreshBooks.com and do my invoices, beautiful invoices, send them out via email. In those days, still a lot of clients wanted paper invoices, and they did that. They would actually print them and stamp them and mail them. And I loved that. But the best thing about these invoices is FreshBooks gets you paid faster, about 5 days faster on average, because there's a pay me button on that. Your clients can actually pay you via a credit card or an online payment service. That makes it very easy. And should they be a little slow to pay, FreshBooks automatically will track them down and let them know, in gentle terms, they need to pay. You'll know, and I love this, when your invoice is viewed. So the client can't say to you, I didn't see it. I know you did it. You opened it on January 6th. You can also do a lot of things that make your life easier. For instance, request a deposit in FreshBooks, which means you don't have to pay costs out of pocket. You can get paid ahead of time. You don't have to wait till the project to get your expenses covered. And expenses, man, it's easy. With the FreshBooks app, you can take pictures of receipts, get them into the invoice. That app will also let you track time and hours, so it's so much easier to get paid. And if you're one of those people, and I know there are a lot of them who uses FreshBooks for home services, you're a contractor or a building inspector, a plumber, FreshBooks is great for that. Because FreshBooks, you can actually present the invoice at the job site on your mobile device, and they have a new swipe card reader. Actually, it's both swipe and dip. It's an EMV chip card enabled reader. So you can get paid right there quickly and securely on your iPhone in less than a minute. It's EMV chip card enabled. So you can, as they say, swipe the stripe or dip the chip. Conduct business anywhere. Even send an estimate right after the handshake. Track your billable time. Throw away the shoebox. There's so many great reasons why you will want FreshBooks. And by the way, when it comes tax time, and we already have to start thinking about that, it's coming. Your accountant or whoever does your taxes, maybe you, will really appreciate the reports. It's simple and easy to get started right now. 30 days free at FreshBooks.com/windows. 30 days free at FreshBooks.com/windows. And if they ask you, where did you hear about FreshBooks? Tell them Paul and Mary Jo sent me. Windows Weekly, baby. And we'd appreciate that because that's a great way to support the show. And we thank FreshBooks for doing that. FreshBooks.com/windows. We're talking Windows and Microsoft. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, Thurrott.com. All about Microsoft.com. Keeping up. You could tell that Paul wrote this headline. Keeping up with the Kardashians or Windows 10 builds. They do seem to be getting
predictable.
Bigger and bigger, aren't they?
Actually, this was Mary Jo's story. That's why I wrote the headline.
Oh, good.
Like, put a little Thurrottism into there.
Yeah, put a little Thurrott. Dip a little Thurrott into that Mary Jo story. Yeah.
So, is there a bitter aftertaste to this story? What is that?
Did we get a new build? I think we successfully turned off beta builds, the fast ring, the Windows Insider stuff on my Dell. I'm glad because I have
Have a build number on your desktop?
I did. I just shut it down because I'm trying to boot it into Android. But
okay. It's okay.
I'll turn it on. It boots fast. It's an SSD.
No, it's not important.
What is the current build number?
So show, like literally like an hour before the show, they released a new Insider Fast Ring build for PCs for Windows 10. It's 11099. That just came out a few minutes ago.
11099.
Right.
Yep. Wow.
Now,
actually, that's funny. If you look at the desktop, I'm sorry, it's the build number is humongous because it's 11099.rs1_release.16019-1156.
I definitely don't have that.
So make sure you get the whole thing. You know, right. Make sure you get that.
Get all 18 digits. Yeah. You'll really want
it. So what
it.
You need to know is that RS is Redstone, obviously.
Right.
And this is a new build for the new year. But Gabe himself, the ringmaster, says there aren't a lot of new noticeable features in here, guys. We've been doing a lot of work on one core, which is the common core across devices, and that's what's in this build primarily.
It's not a
build where you're going to get the Edge extensions or any of the other goodies.
Dang it. I'm still waiting for that. I'm on build 10586.63.
Okay, so that build is for, on your PC, that is the build that just came out yesterday, I believe. And that's a minor update.
Oh, you mean to
1511. I'm still 1511.
Yeah, you're on 1511, which is the November update.
Right.
So if you see 105.863.63, that's the set of minor updates that came out to the November update.
And everybody should have that. That's not
but you wouldn't
Windows
see
Insider.
That on your desktop unless
no, I did
you
got Winver. I did Winver.
Oh, you did Winver. Okay.
Yeah. No, I don't see anything on my desktop.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay, then you're fine.
Yeah. I've turned off apparently successfully. Despite my
definitely successfully. If you don't see anything in your,
that's what I want.
Yeah.
I feel
you're
like
not on the fast
I don't
ring
need now. To be on the fast ring anymore, or slow ring, or any ring.
Fast ring is turning into ludicrous ring.
It is. Yep, it's going to be anyway. That's what Gabe said today. He's like, you know what? The fast ring is going to get a whole lot faster and probably buggier. So if you're not okay with that, you should go to the slow ring.
Good. I'm glad I did.
Yeah.
So little Bobby Salsa in our chat room says that's the full build string. It includes the feature build lab branch and the date it was compiled.
Oh, people.
I should have done
so
that.
So tedious.
I should have
so
done
tedious.
That in the web nerd voice. You know, excuse me.
Mr. Thurrott, you clearly don't understand anything about Windows. The build lab that created the
build lab. I really want to know that. You know, you don't want the wrong.
All I wanted to do was make a joke about the full build string, and you got to turn it into a pedantic teardown of whatever piece of it means.
No. Little Bobby Salsa's not doing that. He's just he's, it's fine. That's what we have a chat room for.
Welcome to Twitter.
yeah.
Listen, I tweeted something as humor the other day. It was You know, the Powerball amount is $1.3 billion. If you split it up between all 300 million Americans, everyone could have $4.4 million. I thought that's the funniest thing I've ever read, so I retweeted it. And then I suffered through a day of people asking me whether I used the Windows 10 calculator to do that.
That's funny.
I clearly not understand. Seriously. You know, but of course, I left off the smiley. It was my fault. But I mean, that's, you know.
You know what I'm laughing at? The office that thought they won the Powerball.
Oh, yeah.
And they
celebrated.
They celebrated and everything.
That's the worst. Look, I just feel like there's entertainment, there's information, and then there's this crowd of people who are just waiting to pounce on any little mistake.
No, Twitter's a little outrage engine.
Like, typo reports on Twitter, you know, not really necessary.
That's okay.
That's all I'm saying.
It's okay. You know what? Everybody gets a voice. We thought that would be a good thing.
I know. It's awesome.
We thought that would be great.
Who would have thought that the collective voice would be noise?
So it turns out democracy, not such a good idea.
Yeah, that's right. Right.
Now we understand the idea of a representative democracy.
Yes.
Not that Congress people are any less prone to this.
Well, obviously that's the creme de la creme of society in Congress.
There you go.
God, that place, like, these, you know, you watch the State of the Union address, right?
I did.
It was like the crowd from the Mos Eisley Cantina from the first Star Wars movie. Like, how did some of these people get in there? What was, you know?
And then it was fun watching the Joint Chiefs of Staff trying to decide, should we stand up now? Should we applaud? No, we can't applaud. So they're very stiff. Oh, but then he said, you know, he's talking about how America's the strongest nation in the world.
They had to look at each other. Do we applaud that?
And finally, they knew when he finally said, "And we have our service people are the best in the world." Then they knew, okay, we could stand up for this one. It was so funny. They were like, really? You could tell they're a little like, I don't know. Do we applaud that we have the 10 times larger budget than any other? Is that an applause?
Was that a dig? Yeah.
Yes,
we're at least twice as good as the next guy down, but we spend eight times as much. And they're like, hey, wait.
Is that good? Do the math.
Yeah.
You saw Satya Nadella right behind Michelle Obama, though, right?
That's interesting, huh? Okay, tell me about that. What do you think? Just celebrating American innovation, right?
By the way, one point I'll just make to that, because I was kind of interested. I don't really follow this stuff this closely, but it seemed to me that in the past, the president, whoever he was, when they have those people up in that box, kind of call them out as part of the speech.
Right.
And I kept waiting for him to mention Satya Nadella, and he never did. And then this morning I read, this is the first time in, they've only been doing this for 30 years or something, I guess, but first time in modern days that the president hasn't called out anyone.
He didn't do, usually they do. And then there's Joe Blow. They tell stories. And you know what? He was, and I appreciate this, really trying to keep it quick. Get in.
Oh, no, it's fine. I thought, whatever, we don't have to rate the president's, speech. But I mean, I found it very interesting that he didn't call it. Right. So it's like getting invited to a party and then no one talks to you.
I think he didn't need to, though. I mean, because they show on TV, they show who's sitting there, the empty chair next to the first lady is very touching. And I think it, by showing the people there, they say, here's a nod to American innovation. And not only American innovation, but to an immigrant.
Oh, an immigrant, running a company that's very successful.
Very important.
I think that,
I think the reason, though, he got invited, from things I've read, is because of all the emphasis Microsoft's had on education, especially around computer science education. And they've given a lot of money away to promote that cause.
It's an honor to be
sitting
there.
I heard that's why.
Yeah, it's an honor to be sitting
there. He was in a prime spot because, by virtue of being behind Michelle Obama, he was on TV a lot.
Yeah.
He was.
There's a, if you go to whitehouse.gov, they have a list of the people who are actually
as first ladies' guests, which
is interesting. And Nadella, they talk about his achievements in paid family leave so it's a bunch of different stuff.
So by virtue of this list, as we were watching this last night, the Syrian immigrant guy, they showed him on TV and I said, oh, that guy's a Syrian immigrant. And then just as I said that, it appeared with his name and it said Syrian immigrant. My wife looked at me and was like, seriously?
Are you channeling the Chiron operator?
How do you know this?
I know it all, my friend. If you only would listen to me.
Yep.
I know it is. That's the other thing I always enjoy as a spectator sport, watching the State of the Union, is trying to watch the commentators, because they're showing the room before the president comes in and all the people, and they're all important members of Congress, cabinet officials, Joint Chiefs of Staff, and listening to the host trying to quickly. Who's that? And then the camera change. Oh, yeah. No, wait a minute. That's I know. No, don't tell me. I know who that is.
It's the guy that played Mr. Hooper on Sesame Street. That's a former second baseman for the Baltimore Orioles.
Especially towards the end of an administration where these people are just basically leftovers. These are the leftovers.
Yeah.
We do that.
That's the guy who was playing the Oval.
Sure, we do. Oh, yeah. He's when we're doing the conference stream coverage, I know I'm sympathetic because we're trying to do the same thing. Yeah. Who's that on stage? The guy with a hat?
Somebody's doing a keynote. It's like you're all sitting next to each other like, who is that?
Guy? Right. What's that?
Back in the day, it was always guy from Microsoft I recognized and then someone really interesting.
The guy with a hat. That's what I call him.
The guy with the hat. Who's the guy with the pith helmet? What's that all about?
The pith helmet. That would be funny. that one I would enjoy.
You know, you're in Las Vegas for a Microsoft show.
Yeah, why don't you have more guys in pith helmets? So the Windows 10 PC build for insiders that just came out, you don't know anything about, but you did install it.
Yes.
Well, it doesn't sound like there's a whole lot of there, right?
That's absolutely true.
Yeah.
They did I think you kind of, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's like one core, right? Under the cover stuff, Microsoft's working on that first. And then Gabe said they're going to start flighting the new features in, you know, pretty soon. So not yet.
Yep.
The other one, though, the 105H6.63. So that came out for PCs. That came out also for Windows for IoT devices. And on each platform, there were some different new features depending on what the platform was. But again, mostly minor things. And this is also, by the way, the same build number that came out for Windows Phone Insiders last Friday. So now everybody's on this number. Right, like 105.
Which, by the way, you should play in the lottery this week.
0.63.
That's my Powerball number. Yep.
So that's the common version across phone for insiders, Windows PCs, not for insiders, for final, and Windows for IoT. So they're trying to have everybody be on the same build number, but everybody's getting slightly different feature set.
Which is really just the greatest path to failure imaginable. just trying to line these things up artificially is so stupid. Man,
there's a lot to line up.
By the way, Mary Jo, I noticed you incorrectly wrote the build number as 105.63.63 and not 105.86.63.
I
just feel the need to call it out publicly.
That's the wrong feature build lab. I'm sorry.
Yesterday I did that on Twitter and people were like, "Rah!"
I don't have it.
Yeah.
Settle down, people. There are people in this world that don't have food, for crying out loud.
Would the Tacoma feature build lab. You Spokane.
You may not realize that Microsoft invested in a company from Israel in 1979.
I know sometimes it's people trying to be helpful.
No. It always is. It's the problem with Twitter is you can't read the this nuance of it. It's just a mess.
Yep.
But thank goodness we're going to 10,000 characters because that'll fix everything.
Oh, yeah, we sure will. That will allow for plenty of nuance.
Nuance galore. Yeah. That's why, by the way, with messaging platforms, I love to employ, and perhaps some would say over-employ, animated GIFs, stickers. Yes. Emojis are so small time now. I want something really big that conveys.
And with the expansion in Twitter, we can expect those animated GIFs to turn into full-run, two-hour-long movies.
Why not a movie? Why not?
Why not?
When are we getting our Surface Pro
This is a rumor. It's from a single source, but I've heard January 19th is the date.
Hallelujah.
For firmware fixes, Surface Pro 4 and Surface Book.
That would be nice.
So that's the power stuff, right?
Yep. It's not clear. I think I was told there's a couple of different things. So,
but there definitely is that. We need that power fix.
Yep.
And I got the Red X. I just opened my Surface Book.
Yes, the best.
The Red X on the eject mechanism saying it's failed, even though I didn't try.
I was sitting at the breakfast table the other day with my wife talking about some travel thing, and I'm trying to do it on my phone. And I said, you know what? I'm going to go grab the computer, and this will be easier on the big screen. And I then spent the next 15 minutes just trying to get Surface Book to come home, just to turn on. And so my wife just kind of, she gets up, she cleans up her dishes and stuff. And she's like, I'm going to go upstairs. Let me know when you figured that out. And that's Surface Book in a nutshell right now.
Yep. I'll see you tonight.
Some people have rated this machine 9 stars out of 10, Leo.
I love it. No, like, I just love it. It's just a few niggly little tiny.
Sure. Like being able to use it, you know, kind of thing. It's like, it's really nice looking. I get it. But geez, it's tough. Wait,
did you give yours back and get a new one? I forget.
Yeah, and this is the one I'm having all the problems with.
This
oh,
is a new one.
No, really.
They didn't fix anything. It's not fixed. No, this is shipping hardware. Doesn't work. Which is why, had this computer not been ready in time for the show today, I would have turned to Surface Book, because what could go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong?
A lot.
No, by the way, I really like it, too. And I travel with it.
I love it.
I like it a lot.
And that's the thing, is I want to like it more.
Yeah.
Because I love the pen. I love the screen. There's a lot to like about it.
Yeah.
But that thing that you have to shut it down or hibernate or something every time. Yes. It's not
good. But I am hibernating it, by the way. I've enabled that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it still doesn't work. I mean, even, I don't know. It's really frustrating.
Yeah. But you still, that's your go-to machine.
Travel-wise. Yeah, I mean,
I've been liking the Dell XPS 13 more and more, to be honest.
I think they're going to, I think Microsoft fixed the Surface Book. I've been sort of contemplating giving Surface Book a second chance kind of article. I'm not really sure what I have to say about it yet. So maybe
I'll just wait till the new firmware.
Yeah.
Then it's reasonable to give it a second chance.
Yep.
Till then, it's like.
Just sits there and mocks me. Hissing at me. Little fans.
Q4 numbers. Actually, not numbers, stats. Well, now, why didn't we do this last week, the stats? Is that what are we talking about? The
No, this is for PC sales.
Oh, this was a bad quarter.
Yeah, it was. And the thing is, I usually try to average the results from IDC and Gartner because they measure things differently.
Yeah.
One of the things that's not in IDC's numbers, which is what we have today, is tablet sales. And by the tablet sales, I mean tablets that detach from keyboards.
Right.
Meaning tablets we would call computers. Surface falls into this category.
So Surface or Surface Book even is a tablet?
I'm not sure specifically. They don't really say. Yeah. But a Surface device, by virtue of the fact that it is a detachable tablet, falls into the category of devices that IDC does not count as computers. Okay. Now, that said, they actually addressed that. And so PC sales still would have fallen year over year had detachable tablets been counted.
On this graph we're looking at, if you're watching the video, the blue is this quarter and the orange is last quarter. So you see everybody dropped except
Apple. That's year over year. Those are years.
Year over year.
That's 20,
not quarters.
15 versus 24.
That's a whole year. Okay.
So PC sales still would have fallen in the quarter. They still would have fallen overall. But because IDC does not count those types of computers, they're attributing this to a record shortfall over 10%. Versus last year. So I think it was three. Why can't I find my numbers? Where is it? 308 million a year ago, and then 276 million units from 2015, according to IDC.
That seems contrary to what expectation would be. Usually when a new version of Windows comes out, that boosts sales. People are pent up demand.
So the number of factors that go into why this is happening, and some of them aren't related to Windows, economic issues, yada, yada, yada. But I actually think Windows 10 is a big part of it. In fact, I think Windows 10 is maybe the big part of it, maybe the number one reason. And it's that, Microsoft is giving away Windows 10 for free.
Interesting. Yeah.
When you combine it with the fact that people have really fallen in love with smartphones and tablets, they're much more personal devices. They'll do things on those devices they can do. And go to the PC only for the things they have to, because it's more of a work type device. It's that, I think, combined with the free Windows 10 upgrade, is stretching out the life cycle of a PC.
Yeah, that's right.
Bigger than ever before. And why would you buy a new PC in September, October, November, whatever, 2015, when you can get Windows 10 for free and just keep using it? Even if Windows 10 hadn't come out, I mean, you could just keep using the PC. So that hopefully changes. They have some good ideas about next year and this year now, I guess, and how things might change. Business uptick is supposed to be faster than ever before. We've kind of heard that one before, but I think there may be some indication that might be the case. Consumers are going to come back. A lot of neat PCs were just introduced at CES, and will come out throughout the course of the year. So we'll see what happens. But I think after Windows 10 is no longer free as an upgrade, that might be the biggest chance the industry has to kind of rebound from the past, I don't know what it's been, 4 years? 4 years, I think. Hmm. 3 years.
Hmm. I still thought the numbers might be a little higher this quarter because of holiday.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
But I think you're right. The fact they don't count anything with a detachable tablet.
I know, it's crazy. Yeah.
That's what a lot of the PCs are now, right? I mean, not just Surface, but other.
Yeah, and they actually, they sort of admitted that, you know, this was a thing about their numbers, which makes me wonder if they're going to change this now. But they also said that that type of computer is actually one of the few bright spots, even in this past year, that those sales of those types of PCs have actually risen dramatically as a percentage, not as a like a unit sales kind of thing. It's still a small part of the market, but where is it? Like detachable tablets, just if you included them, would have bumped the results by 6 percentage points in the fourth quarter alone. It would have been a, you know, because it was a holiday quarter.
Would that have made it a growth quarter or?
No, it still would have fallen short, but it wouldn't have been a record shortfall.
Right.
The record shortfall, by the way, is in line with what they expected.
Yeah.
This wasn't like a surprise, like, oh, what happened? It was, you know, this was expected, but I think when we see Gartner's numbers, they won't be quite as, it'll still be a shortfall, but it won't be as bad.
Yeah. You know, we've been saying for a while, because these numbers have been going down for a while, that it was the ascendance of the tablet. But the tablet's not selling that well either.
Right. Tablet sales are down, actually. Yeah. They've fallen too.
So it's not that iPad sales have replaced this or any kind of tablet sales.
No, I really think it's that, you know, when you if you look at the span of tasks that you can accomplish on these devices, right? In the old days, we did them all on a computer. But as you move forward to modern day, email, browsing the web even, you know, obviously app type things, messaging and so forth, games. More and more people are doing those things on these more personal devices. The weird thing about tablets is that unlike phones, there seems to be a much longer life cycle on them as well, whereas phones seem to be on a maximum of a 2-year spin. In fact, given the recent changes that we just saw with all the cell phone plans dropping off and Apple has their own little loan program now, that may change into a 1-year deal for a lot of people, replacing the phone every single year. And when you do that kind of thing, it makes sense that your other devices would stick around a lot longer. And I just, you know, I just think it's not like the PC, a problem per se for the, with the PC. It's just that our usage has changed. And it's a lot nicer to curl up in bed at night with a little phone than it is with a big laptop. You know, if you're going to read a book or something, I mean, it's play a game or whatever it is you want to do. It's just not the same kind of experience.
Isn't that interesting?
But obviously, if you're going to type a term paper, having a keyboard helps.
Yeah. Yeah.
Still, you know, still the workhorse, but it's
Mary Jo's also right, which is that the life cycle of these things is much expanded. You don't need to buy a new.
I think people are keeping their machines longer.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Mary Jo is using a Windows 7 computer. Steve Gibson is using a Windows XP computer.
Come on, we shouldn't be promoting this.
I'm trying to use a Surface Book. It won't work. So, yeah.
Okay. All right, enough bad news. Let's talk about the good news. Internet Explorer. It's over!
Oh, man.
Oh, geez.
8, 9, and 10. Well, they, you know, didn't they say Edge was going to replace IE?
No.
No, they never said that.
Well, it can't
unless you're on Windows 10.
Right. It's only on Windows 10. Plus, even on Windows 10, there you still have IE 11.
Still get it.
Yeah.
They don't publicize that, but.
No. I mean, businesses still, many businesses have apps where they need Internet Explorer. Yeah. So they have to ship a machine with both, I think.
Right.
But, you know, I don't know if you guys saw all these headlines this week about the phase out of the older versions of IE. There were so many crazy headlines in, you know, ABC, NBC. There were just nutty headlines like Microsoft kills off Internet Explorer. Microsoft pulls the plug. Internet Explorer is dead. And
actually, but my favorite one is that you must have seen these complaints. Speaking of pedantic people on Twitter, what everyone is writing is that if you know what you're talking about, I guess, and maybe this isn't even technically correct, you know, IE 8, 9, and 10 are going away. But there's an asterisk on there, right? Because there on Vista and Windows Server 2008 and maybe some other things, actually IE, what is it, IE 10 or something is still technically supported for some amount of time or something like that. And I can't, seriously, it's like, it's not even worth describing. You know, like Windows Vista with Windows IE 10, like, just stop. Like, I don't even want to talk about that. It's so awful. I mean, anyone who's sticking with these older versions of Windows, I hope, is running a better browser than IE 10 or whatever. I mean, it's sad.
Yeah. You know, we were kind of debating how much time to spend on this because most Windows Weekly users have known this was going to happen. And probably are off of IE, if not at least on IE 11.
Right? At least personally. I mean, obviously at work, that may be a different situation.
Right. That's the catch, right?
Yeah.
Work is the catch because there are still a lot of business apps that were architected to require an older version of IE, like sometimes IE 8, IE 9, IE 10. And, you know, again, I think a lot of people kind of forgot about enterprise mode, which is something that's part of IE 11, which lets you have backwards compatibility for many. If I saw one guy claim over 90-odd% of apps can run.
Is it really that good?
I don't know. No, that I don't know.
These mode things were.
It's like emulation. Not as good. The way it works is my limited.
Is ActiveX the key feature that people, the internets want? Seems like that's it.
ActiveX?
Yeah, I know. Really? Active desktop. I want active desktop.
No, I think it's more a case of some, especially intranet.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. A lot of intranet applications were written years ago.
Right. And a long time ago. Their line of business, right? A lot of them are proprietary to companies. They only use them inside, and they were built to use these older versions of IE. So 2 years ago, Microsoft was like, you know what? We need to take that problem off the table. So they built this enterprise mode into Internet Explorer 11, and they said it'll let you kind of trick the app to think that it's running an older version of IE when it's actually running in IE 11.
I
have not used this myself, but I do know a lot of people do use it, and it seems to work. I linked in my blog to a 3-part series about how to use enterprise mode, tricks for managing the compatibility and what it means and how you set up a site list.
The way you describe it, though, makes it sound like compatibility mode, which merely says, you know, the browser says, huh, no, I'm 9.
The problem is this kind of thing is not as simple as the browser, right? These apps that Mary Jo is referring to often require specific versions of other technologies, right?
ActiveX is like a big one, right?
God, I hope not. Not today. I distinctly remember when they announced ActiveX and looking at the documentation for it. As a developer at the time, you know, taking Calm Plus and moving it to the internet and making it lightweight and fast and everything. I was very excited by this. I thought ActiveX was going to be the greatest thing that ever happened to the web. And it wasn't, you know, I mean, it just wasn't. I was so wrong.
Steve Gibson and I looked at it and said, oh, this means a website can run arbitrary applications on your desktop.
Yeah. And
that
sounds awesome.
Not a good idea. From a developer's point of view, power.
Yep.
From a bad guy's point of view, power.
By the way, this comes from the age of Microsoft, you know, taking their dominant Windows and changing the web to match it. You know, this is what they did to Java too. It's make it part of Windows. You know, that's what that was really about. I was so excited about it.
Is it your sense, Mary Jo, that this compatibility mode has functionality from previous versions?
No, right now, in fact, Leon Zanman, who's been very active contributor on the show today, he's saying what it really is more about is app compatibility with respect to things like HTML and rendering.
Oh, see, that's not enough for intranet.
Well, that's what I mean. You need more than this. You know, there are third-party solutions that businesses can take advantage of, you know, to achieve this kind of backwards compatibility. You know, Gary Scheer, we know, works for a company called Browsium that makes this kind of a solution. And, you know, the Microsoft thing is kind of the first step, but there's often much more to it than just the version of the browser, you know,
right?
Which I think is why this kind of stuff starts to fall apart.
Yeah. But anyway, that's at least something to do and try setting this up with the site list, et cetera, to see if that can help you get off the browser, the older version of the browser. Another thing I found a lot of people didn't note, but I've seen a couple of Microsoft blogs note this, is even if you plan not to use Internet Explorer and you want to remove it, Microsoft is still suggesting you should upgrade to IE 11 because there are a lot of elements from the browser that are actually built into the operating system itself, right? So if you don't first upgrade to the latest version and then you no longer use it, you're still going to be unprotected. So if
using an old version. You realize what that is, right? This is the thing that Microsoft got into trouble for with antitrust, biting us in the ass 15 years later. Like, seriously. They are literally recommending that people who do not use IE still need to upgrade to the latest version of IE before they stop using it because of elements. It's integrated artificially into the operating system. Yeah. Hilarious.
Yeah.
I think it's so terrible.
I think I would do that if I were you.
It's definitely, it's great. It is good advice. There's no doubt about it. This is terrible that has to be the advice.
It is.
Oh, well.
Yeah, and I think there's two ways that people want to use IE. If you're surfing the web, probably a compatibility mode is sufficient. If there's a website out there using ActiveX, forget it. Don't go there. That's just a bad idea. But the problem is the intranet corporate applications that require IE. I mean, by the way, until very recently, QuickBooks, we couldn't use anything but IE on QuickBooks. I mean, there's a lot of line of business stuff that uses old technologies.
That's going away, though.
That's the thing. I mean, it has to go away, right?
Yeah, it's finally starting to go away.
And really, unless you force people to rewrite their software, they're not going to do it. Unless you say, sorry, but your stuff's not going
to
work.
I think it's telling that neither Chrome nor Firefox are falling all over themselves to offer any form of backwards compatibility.
Yeah, but they never did any of this stuff. Oh, IE.
I don't think they have to bother, anymore. I mean, I think, a few years back, this was a much bigger concern. There are always going to be businesses that are behind the times. I mean, I've heard all day long from people who say, this company that I deal with every day still uses Windows XP or whatever. Of course. I mean, that's out there in the world. But hopefully, collectively, the enterprise has been moving forward. Yeah. Slowly, but moving forward.
Yeah. Okay. Unless you're running Windows Vista.
Just skip that, please, dear God.
Flipped right through that.
For those three people who are running an embedded version of Windows, let me run through a chart that will explain exactly which version of IE is supported on your version of the OS.
Just know, there is a chart. You can make it. if you're not using IE, but you're still see, this is the problem. Of course, everybody's going to be using IE if they can't get Edge up to snuff. I mean, all us Windows 10 folk.
I can only speak to the people I deal with, but it seems like a lot of those people, they want to use Edge. Chrome. I certainly do. I use it and I try to use it, and it's not usable. Yeah. And so you use Chrome, you use Firefox, you move on. I mean, hopefully this year they fix it quick. Edge is something I really would like to use because I really like the way it renders text, especially. Yeah. I like the way it looks.
Yeah. Let's take a break. Talk about my mattress. Now, here's a subject that's going to put you to sleep, but in a good way. Casper. Wow. Mattresses made for you and a life well slept. Look, we learn more and more. You know, if there was a period of time, especially amongst technology lovers, where sleep was like, sleep's for I can't use the word. Sleep's for people who have no nerve. No, I can't use the word. But you know what I'm saying. Now we know that, in fact, sleep is everything that your health, your effectiveness, your brains even require a good night's sleep. And if you're lying on an old mattress, mattresses should be changed every decade or so. Or you're lying on a mattress that just never really fit quite right because you had to test it out in a mattress showroom for 5 seconds. You got to find out about Casper. These are premium mattresses, obsessively engineered in the U.S. of A. for a very fair price because they don't have showrooms. By the way, I just got my Casper pillow. They sent me a pillow. I love this pillow. Highly recommend it. You don't have to eat cucumbers if you did like this pillow. It is, and you, that won't make any sense to people listening on audio, but they're apparently on the website. They have some guy chewing cucumbers on the pillow. Casper mattresses you can buy online completely risk-free for a remarkable price. Why risk-free? Because you have 100 days. 100 days to sleep on this mattress. Free delivery in a surprisingly compact box and painless returns within a 100-day period, so you don't have to lie down in a showroom. You can try a Casper mattress tonight and have a better night's sleep for the rest of your life. I love it. You'll love it too. Get a Casper mattress. They start at $500 for a twin, and that's an outstanding price compared to industry averages. And by the way, you'll save an additional $50 by using the promo code Windows. So go to Casper.com, Casper.com/Windows. Use the promo code Windows. Get $50 off. Terms and conditions apply. But the details are available at Casper.com/terms. We really love our Casper mattress. And now I love my Casper pillow. They have sheets too. Casper, Casper.com/windows. The perfect mattress for everybody. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, we're talking Windows on Windows Weekly. And we continue on.
As we would.
As one would on a Wednesday. It's what one does on a Wednesday afternoon. Let's move on to the Microsoft SIM, which we talked about before. I really don't understand even why they would do their own SIM. Will you explain to me?
Simply.
What is this all about, this Microsoft SIM?
So there was an app that showed up in the Windows Store called the Microsoft Cellular Data App. And what it looks like it will do is allow users to connect and pay for mobile data plans for Windows 10 PCs. The app's there. I actually downloaded it.
Google's doing something like this with Fi, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not exactly the same.
But this is only for PCs, right? Not for phones.
Yeah, and it's really not a month-to-month thing. You buy a bit of data, and you never have to buy more.
Oh!
It's just for those moments when you need it.
Right, different amounts of data.
It's an MVNO. They're reselling somebody's service. Yep. Whose service?
So it looks like...
That we don't know.
Yeah.
Well, except we know one partner. We know one partner is Transitel.
Right.
Because Microsoft and Transitel announced a deal at CES around this kind of a thing. And when you download this app, I actually got something. It looked like a document that said Transitel's making a SIM. It's called the Transitel Data SIM for Microsoft Windows 10 enabled devices. I don't know if that is what's called the Microsoft SIM.
Well, no, but they resell other people's bandwidth. So in the United States, it's going to be one or more carriers. We don't know who those carriers are. There's three or four countries that will be online at the beginning. I think France, UK, United States, and maybe one other.
That's it. Yeah.
It will be a different at least one carrier in each country. We don't know who they are yet.
Right.
They haven't officially announced it.
No. And Microsoft's not talking about it. They're just saying, we're looking into new possibilities for Windows 10. That's all we're going to say. Blah.
My understanding is, so the reason this is a good idea, and they do this for Wi-Fi too, and that Wi-Fi thing used to be part of Skype, or actually probably still is part of Skype, the Skype Wi-Fi feature, which confuses everybody. But it's actually a good idea, not so much for Skype, but just to be part of Windows, because you have a Microsoft account that you sign in with, probably. If you use the Windows Store, you do have a Microsoft account that you sign into there. It has some payment method associated with it. And so instead of going through like a hotel Wi-Fi or, you know, whatever it is, wherever you are in the world, you can buy access through Microsoft for Wi-Fi and for cellular data. And you never have to enter credit card information or any of that kind of stuff. It's built into the system. It's integrated. And you don't have to worry about where the information is going. When you buy data through the cellular thing, it looks like, unlike the Wi-Fi, it's a block of data that you can have until you use it. And so you could use, we don't know how it's going to work because it's not online yet. But let's say you bought 200 megabytes if you used 100 megabytes today and the thing just sat there for 30 days, doesn't matter. When you the next time you need it, you still have that 100 megabytes sitting there waiting to be used. That's a really neat way to do it. It's not a monthly commitment. It's just as you go.
The plan does not roam, right? Wherever you buy it.
It doesn't roam outside of countries, right?
Right. So you buy it in France. You can only use it in France.
You buy France data, essentially. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I conceivably you could use the same SIM if you traveled around the world to buy data in France, use it in France, buy data in the United States, use that in the United States. But again, it doesn't. It's not there yet. We don't know.
No.
We're just basing it on documentation and, you know, what little has been announced from, what is it, Transitel?
Transitel
sounds like a French company, doesn't it? Transitel.
It does.
They do.
Company of the future.
they do operate in a number of countries, though, and they set other people up to be MVNOs, it says on their website. Okay. So we don't know a lot more. I think Paul was the one who said maybe we'll know at Mobile World Congress. Like, this does seem like that kind of an announcement.
Yeah, it seems like that type of announcement. It's a great idea. I mean, especially for – it's just a great idea. The problem is most PCs don't have SIM cards in them, by the way, including all of Microsoft's own computers except for Surface 3. And so hopefully, you know, next gen they add that capability. And who knows, maybe – I don't know, maybe there's a way to add it. Maybe they'll have a USB adapter or something. I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, there's all sorts of ways to do that without having a SIM card.
Like
buying a Karma or something. Karma Go. It makes sense that Microsoft would... So this is probably more for hardware going forward, I would guess.
Yeah.
And for that hardware that has it. I mean, a lot of the PC makers ship machines that have SIM cards in them, I assume.
Tablets commonly have SIM card.
Yeah, yeah.
And this SIM sounds like something somewhat similar to what Apple does. They have a generic SIM in an iPad, and then you pick the carrier.
Apple doesn't sell you the data directly, and they you're on a plan, right? I think. Or can you buy it ad hoc?
You can buy it ad hoc.
You can, okay.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's good. That's a neat feature.
Yeah. The only negative on that is if you do choose AT&T, they'll lock the SIM for you.
Yes, yeah. Hooray!
Then you have to, but all you do is you go to Apple and you get a new one, and that's just AT&T.
A new SIM.
SIM, not new
yeah, okay, not a new iPad.
iPad. No, I need a new iPad.
That would also solve the problem.
Right. It would. No, you can just put a new SIM in. I guess there's a way. So essentially, all a SIM is like a pin on your a chip on your a credit card. It's just a serial number, effectively, and then you can associate it with an account.
So I'm going to throw in something not in the notes.
Something
here.
Hot, something new.
Something hot
breaking.
And new.
Breaking.
The only reason I thought of it was we just talked about Mobile World Congress, but Microsoft just announced the build registration date opening.
Oh,
yes.
January 19th is when you will be able to register.
If it's you can like do it while you're upgrading your firmware and your service book.
Don't do that at the same time. Registration opens 9 a.m. Pacific. If I recall from previous years, it's really tough to get on there, and it sells out really quickly usually.
Yes,
sometimes the system goes down. We know the price, $2,195.
Oh.
And build is March 30th through April 1st at Moscone.
Good.
So be ready with your finger on the button, January 19th.
Yep.
By the way, Transitel has a page on their website where we operate.
Yeah.
And it's all over the dang place.
It is all over the place, but the documentation for the Microsoft service says it's only three countries at launch.
All right. Yeah.
I thought it was U.S., U.K., France. I think those are the three.
They also say what we believe, so, you know, there you go.
Yep. Yeah. We believe in partnering with Microsoft.
We believe in making money. You already covered the Skype Translate rollout.
Yeah.
That's everywhere now.
Yeah. All versions of Windows desktop now have Skype Translator built into Skype.
And they have been rolling out group calling in Skype for iOS. I think Android's coming, right?
Yeah. So in the coming weeks, the famous Microsoft quote, in the coming weeks, you'll be getting group video calling for free for Android, iOS, and Windows 10 mobile. And Microsoft published a link this week to sign up if you want to be among the first to test it for those platforms.
Pay no attention to that police action going on.
Yeah, I was
going to
say.
Yeah, just another
if
day.
If Leo gets carted off by the police, we'll go on without you.
It ain't Petaluma, and I'll tell you that right now.
Just outside.
They'll never take me alive.
Copper. Copper. And we were talking about the Elite controller with Chris Campasella and how much you wanted an Elite controller.
Yep. Yeah. And it blew it that time I was at the Microsoft store. Yeah. Well, somebody told me on Twitter when it became available briefly on the Microsoft store online, and so I ordered it, and now I have it.
You got it. It's so jealous. Awesome. So jealous. Ooh, it's pretty too.
It is. You know, it's expensive. When they first announced this, it's $150 for a controller. It's crazy. It's three times the cost of a normal controller. And it's hard to imagine how something could be worth that much unless you were a competitive, you know, professional gamer. But the truth is, like, aside from the sheer quality of it, it's really dense and heavy and made of high quality materials, metal instead of plastic, you know, in many places. A lot of the, it's not going to be really easy to show you this, but a lot of the little, you know, the buttons come off and you can replace the stick with three different height sticks. You can replace the D-pad with like a traditional D-pad. I don't have them on here. I actually find them to be a little confused. I have big hands and it's hard for me but they have paddles on the back, which are probably pretty good for driving games in particular. You can map every single button to do whatever you want. It's amazing. The customization stuff is amazing. The thing I really like about it is on the triggers, which if you think about a shooter is when you're literally shooting, you can actually reduce the throw of the button or the trigger, I guess. And meaning that you don't have to press it as far for it to work. It's almost like cheating. Like you can kind of, it's like a quick action trigger. And if you think about like a hair trigger in a shooter game, it's exactly what you're looking for because you're just trying to shoot everybody. Anyway, it's awesome. I'll review it soon, but Brad's already written his own review on the site. But it is, it's amazing. And if you play video games at all, not just professionally, I mean, if you just play video games a lot on Xbox One, obviously, it's awesome. It's just an awesome controller. And then you go back to the regular one, you go back to the 360 controller, and it's like being stuck in molasses. The difference is really amazing.
I'm
just chuckling because I'm like, wow, we learn a lot on this podcast. Everything from how to shoot in a video game to Hadoop. Yep.
Everything is in here.
It spans the gamut.
We should call it All About Microsoft.com. Oh, wait a minute.
Sure. Except I own that name.
Taken. Dang it. Some person took it. I hate to take another break, but we have to, and you need to prepare your beer pick, your Windows tip, your code name, your enterprise pick, all that good stuff, the best stuff, the back of the book. So let's do that right now while I tell you how we find great employees via ZipRecruiter.com. The hiring you do in your business is really the single most important thing as a manager or as an owner you can do. Because your business, your company, is made of people. Shocking, but true. And the right hire can transform your company. The wrong hire can transform your company. You can go either way. ZipRecruiter puts you and your opening in front of the largest number of people possible. It gives you the best shot at finding exactly the right person because when you post on ZipRecruiter, you're posting to more than 100 different job boards and social networks like Twitter, Craigslist, and I might add, you're also going through their more than 6 million current resumes because lots of people post on ZipRecruiter.com. So a great place to find a job, but a great place to find an employee. It's very easy to post a job on ZipRecruiter. You post once, it goes everywhere, and then within 24 hours, you're going to start getting lots of candidates. You can easily, in the ZipRecruiter interface, rank them, screen out the ones you don't want, and pick the right person fast. It just is great. 6.8 million resumes in their database, thousands of new ones coming in every day. 6.8 million. It's also great for somebody who's on mobile. It's an easy way for you to get mobile job seekers and for you to screen them and rate them. And they don't come into your inbox. They don't come to your phone. It's so easy. That's why more than 400,000 businesses use ZipRecruiter. That's why we use ZipRecruiter. There's so much more, including onboarding and HR stuff. And it just really is a great solution. We got a testimonial from Dan. He's a happy ZipRecruiter client. Wrote, the hardest part about running a business when you need to hire is you have to spend extra time recruiting when you're short-staffed, just the exact time you can't. But with ZipRecruiter, I have quality candidates within 24 hours of posting a job. ZipRecruiter's website makes this process so much faster by letting me manage candidates all in one place. It is a revelation. You could try it right now, absolutely free, when you go to ZipRecruiter.com/windows. ZipRecruiter.com/windows. Try it free. You'll be a believer. We are. ZipRecruiter.com/windows. And we thank them for their support of Windows Weekly with Paul and Mary Jo. And it is time now, ladies and gentlemen, for Paul Thurrott's Tip of the Week.
So first, I should thank Chris Wolfel, who was the guy that tipped me off to the controller being available. So thank you, Chris.
Can you tell me where to get it?
I got it at the Microsoft store online, but actually it's sold out again. So I didn't know you wanted one. I will.
No, I would love one next time they're available.
They become available and then they sell out.
I'm not like you. I don't play hard all the time, but when I do, I'd like to have a good control.
You got to play hard if you want to die hard, Leo.
That's what Bruce Willis says.
This is a weird coincidence, but over the weekend, I updated the book, the Windows 10 Field Guide. And one of the things I updated was a section on security, like keeping the PC secure. And so in the antivirus, anti-malware thing, I previously just had some information about Windows Defender. And I expanded it with more information about Windows Defender, explained how you could augment Windows Defender with some other stuff, how you could replace Windows Defender with third-party tools. And I specifically mentioned things like malware, anti-malware, Malwarebytes, anti-malware, AV test, which is the best place to go to get the latest up-to-date information about antivirus and anti-malware packages and so forth. And then I thought, this is kind of a cool article for the website. I'll put this on Thurrott.com as well, kind of an excerpt from the book kind of thing. And so I did that the next day, I think, or on Tuesday maybe. And then about 2 hours later, the New York Times published an article about how you can protect Windows 10 with Windows Defender, or you could use something else alongside Windows Defender. Maybe you could use malware Malwarebytes, anti-malware, And I'm like, what? So, and by the way, you should go to AV test because this website has all this information.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, so it was kind of a weird coincidence. I'm not accusing anyone of anything, but the timing of it was kind of weird. So I just sort of noticed that. It was, and then this morning, because I read the New York Times electronically, it was actually like in the paper. And so I saw the headline and it reminded me of how much that irritates me. But anyway, weird coincidence.
Did they have a lovely Photoshopped image of a young woman?
No, they didn't. But yeah, it was very interesting how closely they tracked each other.
Wow, is weird. Okay.
So since I was bogarted by the New York Times, I will offer a bonus tip, which is that for a very limited time, and this is probably U.S. Canada only because it's through the Microsoft store, if you buy a Surface 3 directly from Microsoft, so online or in their physical stores, January 17, which is Sunday, through the end of the day on Sunday, you can get a type cover for free. That's $129 worth of stuff there, so and that significantly impacts the price of the device. And so a Surface 3 tablet by itself is $500 to $700, depending on which version you get. You can save $129. That's not so bad. Now, it's likely that Microsoft will replace the Surface 3 sometime in the next, 2 to 4 months, probably with a Surface 4 type device that will have an updated processor and other internals, might have a Windows Hello type camera. You know, we're just kind of speculating here, but based on what we see with Surface Pro 4 and Surface Book, it's conceivable that this is maybe the first step toward them clearing out inventory. But still, it's a great little device.
When did it come out?
I think it was last. I want to say it was last April.
So it's almost a year old, but not. Yeah. Remember, I was telling you the seventh grader whose family asked for advice on a PC, and this is what they bought her. And it's a great This is even more great for something like that. For
this is an ideal student computer.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
My big recommendation with Surface 3 would just be to get the version with 4 gigs of RAM. Just to sort of future-proof it. The 2 gigs
is that the
that's
most
in the base,
you can get? Yeah, 2 is too small.
Yeah. 4 is the only is as high as you can go.
Yeah.
So definitely do that.
Absolutely.
If you're going to get it. So, or get it by Sunday, too, because you can save $129.
Good deal.
And then for software picks, I did mobile picks last week. So this week I have some desktop picks. And so on Windows 10, I've been talking about this a little bit on Twitter, but there is a Windows 10 app called Spotbright. And if you run Windows 10, you need to get this. It's awesome. What it does is it grabs those awesome Windows Spotlight images that you see in your lock screen, and it downloads them to your computer. And it downloads them in two really high-quality versions. There's one for a desktop computer, so it's a big landscape image. And then there's a portrait one for the phone. And so you can use them on your phone or on your computer. And the reason this is so cool is these images are beautiful, but there's no real direct way to access them that's reasonable or reliable. And this thing grabs hundreds of them at a time. And so there must be some database in the cloud that has the most recent ones or whatever. So you could probably run it from time to time. But I did this the other day, and you know, if you're using Spotlight on Windows 10, you know that the lock screen stuff is awesome. You turn the computer on. If it's a Surface Pro, you got to fiddle with it a little while, but you turn it on eventually, and that lock screen comes up, and it's awesome. And then you're like, oh, I'd like to really put that on my desktop or something. You can't. Well, now you can. You got to get Spotbright. It's awesome. And it's free. And then on the Mac, Microsoft updated Outlook 2016, or will soon update Outlook 2016 as part of the January update for Office 2016 for the Mac to support two key Mac OS 10 features, full screen view and split view. And they work similarly, but full screen view is Yosemite and newer. It's a way to have multiple things on screen at the same time from the same app. And so within Outlook, you could have, you know, two messages side by side. You could just have the whole app full screen, obviously, with no menu bar, no dock or whatever. That's kind of cool. And then split view, I think, is the newest version of Mac OS X only. Split view works like split view does in Windows. You can split the entire screen between two different apps. And then because Outlook supports it directly, you can split it between two different parts of Outlook. And so you might have your Outlook mail module on the left side and then your Outlook calendar module on the right. And you can kind of, you know, maybe write an email while you're taking note of your schedule on one side. And I didn't look on the Mac today to see if this is out right now, but it should be out pretty soon if it isn't. And it will be free, of course, for anyone who has Office 2016 on the Mac.
I will check while we continue.
Yeah, I should have done that by now.
I could do it. But before we do, it's time for an enterprise pick of the week and Mary Jo Foley.
Yes. My enterprise pick is our server. And we talked last week about our server. Our server is the new name for Revolution Analytics, our product line that Microsoft bought about a year ago. R is a programming language that is commonly used in big data, statistics, predictive modeling, and machine learning. And now Microsoft has a full line of products to address those markets. They have everything from R server for Hadoop on Red Hat to R server for Red Hat Linux, R server for Teradata. They have a whole bunch of different products. But the reason I made it my pick this week is there was one version of R server I didn't know about last week, and that's an R server for developers. So if you want to get a free version of R server, the way you can do that, if you're a developer, a data scientist, or a database administrator, you can sign up using your Microsoft account through the Visual Studio Dev Essentials program, which is a whole bunch of free resources for developers that Microsoft announced last year. And if you do that, you also will get access to a developer version of our server for free. You can only use it for testing and development purposes, not to launch a commercial product using R. But it's a good way to kind of dabble with R if you don't want to pay up for through MSDN or to buy a whole new license for our server. So that's my pick, is the free version of our server for developers.
Arr.
Arr.
Arr. Pirate language.
And our code name.
Okay, the code name pick is an old code name. It's Maharo. And Maharo was the code name for what became Azure Remote App Service. The reason I made it my pick this week is it's indirectly related to something that came out yesterday, which is a new version of the remote desktop app preview for Windows 10 Mobile. Why is that interesting? Because up till now, you've been able to use Continuum with Universal Windows Platform apps, but not with your existing Win32 apps. If you have access to remote desktop and you have all your licensing in order to get access through the remote desktop, you now can use Continuum on the Lumia 950 and the 950 XL to access your existing Win32 apps on your PC or server. So if, say, you're me and you want to use WordPad through Continuum, you know, like one might, you can do that using this new Azure Remote App Preview on Windows 10 Mobile. More practically, if you're not me, you want to access your line of business apps or full Office, not just the mobile version of Office, you also could use this new Remote Desktop App Preview for Windows 10 Mobile. Maharo fits in because right now, that preview app does not yet support Azure Remote App Service, but it sounds like from today's blog post by the team that that is coming soon before they take the preview tag off that app. So I'd say if you have a new Windows 10 phone and you want to try out Continuum with your existing apps, go grab that Remote Desktop App Preview that's in the store now.
Excellent.
By the way, sorry to interrupt. Chris Waffle tells us that the GameStop does have the Elite controller in stock right now.
Ah, I'm on my way. There's a GameStop just across town.
But you might not want to go till you have this beer pick.
Oh, well, you right. had me at beer.
Nothing helps you spend money better than a little good beer.
Have a little beer before I go.
And you might even find this one, Leo, because it's from California.
I like the name.
The beer is from Ballast Point. Ballast Point is an excellent craft brewery in San Diego. And Ballast Point makes a whole series of beers called Victory at Sea.
Yes.
What they are imperial stouts. They're made with vanilla and coffee. They're amazing. Mm. But they can get even more amazing because there are some special variants of Victory at Sea, including a one I had this week called Victory at Sea Peanut Butter that adds just a touch of peanut butter to Ballast Point, and it makes it like the best Reese's cup you've ever had in your life. Nice. It's so good. If you like peanuts and you like chocolate and coffee and vanilla all kind of blended together in beer form, this Victory at Sea peanut butter would be your beer.
I just love the name. I have to get some.
So good. I couldn't believe how good it was.
A peanut butter cup in a beer. What will they think of next? All right.
That's funny.
Mary Jo Foley, when she's not drinking beer, is writing about Microsoft pretty much all the time. Sometimes at the same time. You never know what you're going to get when you go to allaboutmicrosoft.com, her ZDNet blog, and you can tweet her if you've got a tip at Mary Jo Foley. Paul Thurrott at Thurrott, Thurrott, both at Thurrott and at Thurrott.com. And
gay.
Whoa. You might be.
I think I had some of that beer
either,
there.
Either that was the peanut butter talking or Paul's out of focus.
Peanut butter.
Ooh.
Don't know what happened there. Sorry.
We do Windows Weekly each and every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1900 UTC. On Twit, and you can watch live, be in the chat room. If you can't watch live, you can always listen after the fact or watch after the fact. We have audio and video available at twit.tv/dubdub or youtube.com/windowsweekly. I think it might be Windows Weekly Show. I can't remember. You know, if you go to, for any of our shows, each of them has their own YouTube channel, but you can also go to youtube.com/twit, find the show there and subscribe to it. We have put our product reviews also at youtube.com/twit. And there's a product review playlist. Somebody was asking, how do I get all your product reviews? Well, they're on a variety of shows now, so that's the best way to do that. And, of course, you can subscribe in your favorite podcatcher, because everybody knows Windows Weekly.
Podcatcher.
Podcatcher. I never liked the word podcast, and I hate podcatcher even more, but what are you going to do?
Yep.
Your local RSS aggregator.
Yeah. There you go. Problem solved.
Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.